Okay, we're holding by the new parak. Zayin Amid Beis, Dr. Mishnah. Ein erachim pachas mesela v'leyes al chamishim mesela. By erachim, you don't find an amount less than a sela. This is a chazara fast, we've spoken this out before. Or more than 50 slum. We know the highest amount, there's a difference between males and females and ages. The highest amount is a male between ages 20 and 60. The amount you pay for erach is 50 slum. The lowest amount, fixed amount is really how much? Very good, Benji. It's 3 slum for a female between 30 days to 5 years, right? It's 3 slum. However, if a person can't afford it, he goes in front of the kain. If he can't afford even that amount, or any other amount that he pledged, he can't afford, he goes in front of the kain evaluates him, and we know the lowest amount the kain could evaluate him for, no matter how much money he has, is always 1 sela. So the Mishnah says, the erichin is always a minimum of 1 sela, that's the lowest, and a maximum of 50 slum. Ketzad. Nasan Salavishir says the Mishnah, what if he gave a sela, he made a pledge, he was assessed at being able to pay only 1 sela, he paid it, and then he became wealthy. Einay Nasan Klum. He need not give any more, even though now he's wealthy, he need not give any more because once he fulfilled his pledge in a situation where he didn't have more funds, he was yay to the pledge and it's finished. Pachas Masalavishir, what if he gave less than a sela and then became wealthy? Nasan Chamishim Slum. What if he gave less than a sela and became wealthy, he then has to pay 50 slums. So again, the guy made a pledge. He was poor. The kayan assessed him at being able to pay the minimum amount, which is namely what? 1 sela. He didn't pay the full sela. He paid part. He didn't pay full, so he didn't absolve his chiyuv. And then Baruch Hashem, he struck a rich, he became wealthy. Halach is now, since he never absolved himself from his chiyuv, and now he has money, he's obligated to pay the full amount. The Lashon HaMishnah is he pays 50 sela. It's actually the Imre Bina is Medayik and Rashi later on in this Shaka Vataya that Rashi Taka learns it's Dafka. That if a person didn't pay the full amount, so he's left with an open chayiv, later when he has more money, he has to pay the full amount, he actually owes the full amount. You don't even deduct the little bit that he paid. Exactly. Let's say he paid half a sela. You don't even deduct half a sela, you pay the full amount. From Rambam, it seems pretty clear that if a person says, 50 slum, and he paid 4, and he just didn't pay the rest, later all he has to do is be mashlam 46. He doesn't have to pay the full amount, he just has to equal, from scratch, he has to equal the full amount. The equivalent of this we had recently in Bechairis. The similar idea is that if a person is paying the kayan out 1 sela at a time, we said it's no good, right? If he does it immediately, counts out 5, we said it's okay. But if he pays 1 today, 1 later, 1 a different time, it doesn't work. Not only doesn't it work, he still owes how much? 5 slum, exactly. So that would be the equivalent to the way Yom Rabin is learning in Rashi and the simple reading of this Lashon of our Mishnah. Rambam learns that the Mishnah just means he has to finish up to 50 slum, not pay a full 50, because whatever he pays does count towards the payment. Okay. Hayi biyadav chamishim slum. Chamish slum. What if the fellow had in his hand 5 selas? So here's simple machlekes. The guy made a pledge, the case where he's obligated to pay 50. His valuation is 50. And all he has is 5 selas. So he doesn't have 50, he can't afford 50, but he could afford more than 1. What does he pay? So, Rameir Eimer, Einin Esel Achas. Rameir says only pays 1. Rameir's understanding is either you pay the full amount, or you pay, if you can't afford, you pay 1. There's no in between. V'cham Eimer, no, Nesel is Kulin. He pays what he has. He can afford 5 slum, he pays all 5 slum. Says the Mishnah, seemingly a very repetitive line, Ein Be'erich M'pachas Mesela, by Erechin, you don't have less than 1 sela or more than 50 sela. It's exactly the first line of the parak, of the Mishnah. It's the first line of the very same Mishnah. Said the exact same halacha. The Gemara is going to explain, we'll say now already, that the Chiddush is that we're passing like the Rabbanan. We're coming to pass like the Rabbanan. I mean, the Mishnah is stressing, you don't find more than 50 or less than 1. But in between, you do find, which is like Hushita, like the Rabbanan, not like our Meir. So the Mishnah is reiterating that line to stress that we paskin like the Rabbanan, not like Rameir, which in itself the Mefarshim actually bothered. I'm not going to get into any answers on this, but typically, Mechlekes, Rabbanan, Rameir, we paskin like the Rabbanan. Why would we even find a need in a cryptic way to demonstrate that we paskin like the Rabbanan? Okay. Says the Gemara, Ein Be'erich M'pachas Mesela, Menon D'Chsif V'Chalakachiyah B'Shaka Kaidish. Says, Oh, Ye'erich M'Shaka Kaidish. The simple touch of this pasuk is just saying that when we talk about payments for Erichin, we're talking about in denominations of Shkalim. But we learn from there also, we learn from this pasuk as well, that any erchin that you, evaluations that you do, should never be less than one shekel. And not more than 50 shekels. How do you know that? Because that's the highest amount given in the parsha of, we had an end of Sefer Ikra. In the parsha of Erechin, the highest amount given was, Chamishim was 50 shekels. How about the Chamishim, what if he had five shekels in his hand? So according to the mayor, he only gives one. According to Chamim, you give them all. My time with the mayor, Ksiv Chamishim, Ksiv Shekel. It says Chamishim Shekel. Therefore, we say, Ay Chamishim Shekel. He says the Psukim give options of Chamishim, or the Drasha we just had of Shekel. They pay as little as a Shekel. So therefore, we learned that you always give a denomination that was fixed in the Torah. So it's either 50. If you can't do 50, even though that's your value, you go down to the small denomination, namely one, nothing in between. For Rabban, they'll say no. Ha'ulachol Erchen, Sha'ata. That pasuk is for the drasha that we said before, that you never give less than one shekel. But avada hechadisle, when you have more, enough to give more than a shekel, what does the pasuk say? Amar kara shatasi got a neider. It's good dik. The pasuk says pretty clearly, the amount, the hand of the neider, the hand of the neider possesses, that's what he should give. So more, varei masagas. He can afford to give more than one shekel, and therefore, of course, he give that. Whatever he can afford to give, that's what you give in between one and 50 shekelim. For Rav Meir, what is with that pasuk? Seemingly, the simple text is like the Rabbanan. Rav Meir will tell you, no. Hahu yad neider, v'leyaram neider hudasa. If the pasuk would have simply just said that ashtasik yad, I wouldn't know whose hand we're evaluating. Are we evaluating the hand of the one who made the pledge? Or are we evaluating the one who the pledge was about? Meaning, if Reuven pledges to give the erech of Shimon, and Shimon is not a man of means, or is a man of in between means, so do you go based on Shimon's ability, the subject of the vow, or Reuven who made the vow? Because there'd be a havdalah. Do you go based on the person who is the subject of the vow? Therefore, the pasuk says. We're quoting, this is the pasuk that, yes, this is the pasuk of the Torah. There's another pasuk in that same parsha. The pasuk says there that if a person can't afford that amount, you do asher tasig yada. You do what is the amount that he can afford. The question is, the amount that who can afford? The one who made the pledge or the subject of the pledge? So the Rameir says, that's why that pasuk is there for. Not to tell me you give an amount in between one and 50, it's just telling you who is the, it's 50 or one. Rameir is sticking to his guns, 50 or one. We're just saying, based on whose ability are we evaluating whether it's 50 or 1, based on the ability of the one who actually made the pledge, which would be the simple logical choice, not the mechudishtika choice of the one who's the subject of the vow. So the Merv Rameir, who yada neidiv, leyada neidu hudas, come to teach you that you go based on the ability of the neid, the one who made the pledge, and not the ability of the one who the subject of the pledge was about. Again, if that would be the case, that one of the pledges was about, it would be some sort of gzeiras hakasav, because it would just be a din teira, that you go based on one of the pledges about, but we're coming to exclude from that idea. Rabban would say, okay, very good, Rabban agree. Very nice, Rameir. You need the pasuk to darshan that you go based on the ability of the one who made the pledge. But at the end of the day, you say you go based on his ability. So still read the words. Based on the ability of the one who made the pledge, and his ability is in between 1 and 50. Therefore, you still pay in between 1 and 50, not 1 or 50. Even in between, you still pay. And the Mar does not bring an answer for Rameir. For Rabbanon, lava mela shamine, we still learn from the mela, whatever ability he has to pay, that much you take. You do take that much. And therefore, you're right. You have to become lafuke, basing it on the ability of the subject of the pledge, but at the end of the day, you still tell me you go based on the ability of the one who made the pledge, and that ability is whatever you could pay, even more than one, and less than 50. Amar Vad Rava. This conversation Vad Rava is about to have applies only in the Rabbanan. Remember, because according to the mayor, it's either one or 50. According to Rabbanan, if you have five sellas, and you can afford five sellas, you pay five. So, what if you have five sellas in his hands? Vama Erek Yelani, and he says, I make the pledge for Erechin. So he's got to give, what does he have to give? All five. V'chaz of Erech Yelai. And then he again says, Erech Yelai. He again pledges Erech. V'nas, so he pledges made two Erechin pledges. V'nas and Arba L'shniya V'echa L'shena. Now before we even go further, before we see what he did, what was his obligation? Once he made the first pledge, he was obligated to give the full five to the first. Chayre. His mitzvah was to give the first five to the first. They were Meshubit. And then, come up with at least one seller to pay the second. That would be the normal course of events. But it's not what he did. What did he do? He gave four of the five for the second, v'yech l'rishayna, and then he gave the remaining one back for the first. What's the halacha? Yotza yidei shneim. He He satisfied both obligations. Why? My time. Because we find a similar concept by a regular creditor. Let's say a fellow borrows money from two people. He has no, forget about encumbered properties. All he has is the cash that he has on hand. He borrowed $100 from Reuven, and then borrowed $100 from Shimon. The Ikar Halacha is, who has first rights to get the $100? Reuven. Reuven borrowed first. The money was owed to him first. Reuven has first rights. But if the debtor paid Shimon first, whatever money Shimon lent him, the Halacha is what's paid is paid. You can't go, because Shimon also has a legitimate claim on this debtor's money. And therefore, once he collects it, Shimon keeps it, and Reuven can't go back and say, I was first. And therefore, again, we talk about Karkoyas and Shibudim. Could be, you could go, the land is Reuven Shibudim, you could go back, you go in order with Shtaris, you go in order of the dates. But we're talking about here, regular, just free money. He has cash, and he owes two people money. He should lechatchila pay the first one first, but if he did not, the first creditor cannot go and extract the money from the second creditor. So here too, same thing. Says the Gemara, my time about chayv me'ocher shekana begava mashekav begava. What's collected was collected. Therefore, as follows: bidin the other shniyah meshibah l'shayna. When he paid the second neder over here, he was meshibah to the first. So the four that he paid for a second erech vow, those that's for sure good enough. Really, all five of these coins were meshibah to the first vow. So how much money does he have? Really, zero. So what's his obligation? At most one even. So the four that he paid for sure satisfied the second vow. Okay, but what about the first vow? Says the Gemara, be'idna diyav l'rishayna sulesle. By the time he comes to pay the first vow, he doesn't have any money left. He has how much left? One. He used four to pay the second. He only has one left. So right now, when he comes to pay the first vow, he has one seller left. So all he has is his name. And therefore, one is sufficient. A person doesn't have any means. One is the minimum amount. One is sufficient. Now, what's interesting is, it would seem that the mice of the chiyav originally on the first one was five. He had five available. The chiyav was chal, a chiyav of five. So just because he went down in money, who says he's able to get away with one? Essentially, we're really getting to the crux of the shaila really would be, what point do we evaluate a status as a person who is a man of means, or whatever means he has, and when do we say that he's mechuyav to pay based on that status? Meaning, do you go based on his valuation at the time he made the vow? Do you go based on his valuation at the time that he's paying? Very good. Or do you go based on his valuation somewhere in between at the time the kain assesses him? What's the point where we assess how much he has to pay? So our Gemara seems to be saying simply go based on when he's paying. Pretty clear. However, the problem is, and Taisa says the Gasha, others the Chemisha's Gasha, when he's paying. Because we're saying he's able to patter up his original chayv, even though he had five slum when he made it, by only giving one seller, because that's all he has left right now. So you go based on what he's paying, which would make sense, you can understand it, but the problem is the Mishnah Daf Yud Zayin seems to say that he's obligated based on his status at the time of the neder. That's the simple reading of the Mishnah Daf Yud Zayin. How do we reconcile that with our Gemara over here? So the Rishonim are bothered by the question, and there's two answers given. One answer given is Tosfos. And Taisa wants to say that Nechami doesn't mean his status at the time he makes the neder on David Zayim. It's his status at the time the Kayin evaluates him. And in our case, even though he had five slum to his name, he wasn't evaluated then. He's only being evaluated now once he paid four slum for the second neder. And he only has one left. That's when he's being the equivalent of being evaluated. He only has one left. And therefore, it's not a steer to the mission later on. Again, the barometer is what his financial status is at the time he's being evaluated. That's what the Mishnah means later on, and it wouldn't be a steer to our Mishnah over here. That's Taisa's resolution. The Lechem Mishnah says a beautiful chat. Lechem Mishnah says, no, read the Mishnah in Zion the way it sounds. That the status he had at the time he made the pledge, that's obligation. So if he was rich then, he's got to pay that amount of money. Even though later he loses money, he still owes the larger amount. So in our case, he had five slum. So our issue is, why is he able to discharge his chayiv with one cell he has left? He should have to pay at least five slum. Says Lechem Mishnah beautiful chab. He's only called an usher if he could pay the full amount. What's the full amount? 50. 20 to 60's age. 50 slum is the full amount. So he's only considered an usher if he could pay the full amount. Since he only was able to pay five slum when he made the pledge, you're right, he's able to pay more at Shas the pledge to now, but that's not called an usher. It's not a real usher. Obviously, he has to pay what he has if he has it at that time when it comes time to pay. But if he doesn't have it, he never got stamped with the status of usher, and therefore he could pay the lower amount. Beautiful chab from the Lechem Mishnah. Okay. Zuck the Gemara on top. Nasan Arbalishen. What about the other way? What if he gave four for the first pledge, viachas l'shnia, and one for the second pledge? So he paid in order. This guy seems to be doing things more correctly. He's paying in order. He actually messed up. Nasan Arbalishen, viachas l'shnia. He gave four for the first and one for the second. Yatzah. Yeah, second one is yatzah because you're right. By the second one, all the money was ready to be shipped for the first pledge, and he has no money left, so he has to pay the minimum, namely one sellus. That's all good. He wasn't yatzah de rishena. Why? Kulum b'shav l'mishena. Because since when he made the pledge, he had five slam available. He owes all five slam for the first pledge. And he still, when he's satisfying the first pledge, he has five slam available. So therefore, he has to pay five. He only paid four, he's not yaitz. And again, reminder, this is actually where they bring out this machlekes, Rashi and Rambam again, that he wasn't yaitz, so he paid four out of five. How much does he have to pay now at a later date? Does he have to pay, very good, Jeffrey, does he have to pay five, which is the simple mashmais in the Mishnah, you have to pay 50. According to Rashi and Rabin Zvim Daik, you have to pay all five new. According to Rambam, they want to say no, he just have to be mashlim and pay one more to tap it up, to complete it, to five. Okay. Boy, Rav Ada Barava. How you be at the slam? What if a fellow had five sellas? Vamar shnei erchi alai vazachas. So here's the Kshmaki case. Instead of saying erchi alai, and then erchi alai, two separate pledges, he said, pledge two erchins at the same time. So what's the shaila? Mal kivud vasachas nader be'adadi tapsan yov tayte pagalai v'tata pagalai. Simple. Since he made both pledges at once, no pledge is taking effect for the other. He has a total of five slum. We know the minimum to pay is one, but according to Chum, you pay whatever you can. What does he have per pledge? 2.5. 5 divided by 2 is 2.5. So he pays 2.5 sellas per pledge. Simple. Or no. There's a concept we try to find by kedushin elsewhere about something trying to be chab vasachas. We look at it and say, he made two pledges at once. Each pledge, as a guy, is a fellow who has in his possession five slum. You're right, he made two pledges at once, and each one, he can't pay five to both, but each one has a claim, so to speak, on his value of five slum, on his valuation, on his, when I say valuation, I mean his worth, right? He has assets available to pay a five seller. So each one is obligated to five, and therefore, if he pays five, he patters one, and the other one will remain in effect. He'll be obligated to pay another five for the second one. The Gemara leaves it as a shaila. Rambam actually doesn't quote this Gemara the exact way we have it, meaning, could be, I'm not saying he has a different case than the Gemara, but he brings down a similar case where a fellow has 54 shekels. I don't know if that's the exact number. It's 50 plus shekels. Let's say it's 54 shekels. And he pledges two erchins at once. So what do? Do you say he pays 27 and 27? Because that's all he has per pledge. Or do you say, no, this is a guy who could afford to pay a 50. So he pays 150. And then the other one, he pays four and owes the remaining 46. Remember, Ramesh Tassi, you could pay it down in part. Okay, take it, leave us a shalah. We don't have more than a selah. Or less than one seller, more than 50. Haslamli, the Mishnah repeated the last line, and we already said in the beginning of the Mishnah, the same exact line. Hakamash, when we spoke out this already, Pachas Mesela Hudileka, Hayas Mesela Eka, Yes, Chamisha Mudileka, Pachas Mechamish Meka. The Mishnah is reiterating to stress, you don't have less than one seller, but you have more. You don't have more than 50, but you have less. Meaning there are numbers between 1 and 50, not like our mayor who says it's either 1 or 50, rather like the Rabbanan, says the Gemara of a stomach Rabbanan. It's coming to teach you the stomach is like the Rabbanan. Now, in order to get this next Mishnah clear, we need a very simple Agdam. We've done this many times before, but just to remind ourselves what the basic dinim guidelines of Nida and Ziv are. The reason why this mission of following Mishnayos are coming into our Masechta, even though they're no Shaychus, is because this Lashon of Pachas, minimum maximums. We have minimum maximums, so we have more minimum maximums. The Lach is, and the reason why we're not so familiar with this is because these Halachas are not Negeyat B'Zman Hazeh. Meaning, the Din Torah is that Isha sees Dam once a month, that's why she sees Udam. We'll call it the new cycle. She's a Nida. She's now a Nida. She's Tame for how many days? Very good, Benji. 7 days. And that means she's Tame whether she has clean days, she has non-clean days, she sees Dam for 7 days straight. As long as she stops seeing Dam at the end of 7 days, she goes to the mikvah at night and she's Tar. Those are called Yimei Nida. 7 days of Nida. So she sees Dam. Even if she's clean for 5 days, for 3-4 days in a row still, she needs to wait 7 days. At the end of the 7th day, as long as she stops seeing Dam, goes to mikvah, she's Tar. After that 7 day period is an 11 day period called Yimei Ziva, the 11 days of Ziva. If she sees Dam 1 day there, what does she have to do? Very good. One day, Shemeres Yom Kinyan, she keeps one clean day, goes to mikvah, star. She sees them 2 days, same thing again. Shemeres Yom Kinyan, she goes to mikvah, she star. If she sees them 3 days during that 11-day period, she's what's called a zava gedayla, a full-fledged zava, who needs to keep 7 clean days. Remember, our first nida didn't have to keep any clean days. She just had to be clean at the end of 7 days. In zava, in Yemei Ziva days, 11 days, she, if she sees dam 1 or 2 days, she just needs to keep a clean day and then go to the mikveh and then she's tar as well. When does she have to keep 7 clean days, which is we know what we do all the time? She keeps 7 days only if she sees 3 straight days during the 11-day period. She's a zavah gedayla. Now she needs to keep 7 clean days. It's famous Gemara, Reb Zera says, B'nai Yisrael hechmir al atman. This is what we do. We're knowing that even if Isha sees tipas dam, kechardo, the size of a mustard seed of dam, once, forget about 3 days, once, sees dam that size, we keep 7 clean days. Big chumra. That's our naig. Just to stress the fact that even though we're calling it a big chumra, the Gemara in Bracha says, we're going to get to what we do, that a person before he learns should only learn b'techa lecha p'suka. He shouldn't, you know, get involved too much of a pilpul sugya, which may distract his davening. He should learn lecha p'suka before he davens. Kigayim, what lecha p'suka? The Gemara in Bracha gives an example. The lecha that nashim keep 7 clean days after Tibas Av Gachardo. Why did the Gemara pick that halacha as a case? So the first one point out, because it seems to be this massive chumra. On the contrary, it's halacha psuk. It's a clear halacha. It's undisputed. Don't even try to start massaging it as some sort of chumra. We have to be makbid. It's halacha psuka. It's a clear, factual halacha. Don't play games. Fine. So now, every Isha, she has the 7 days and then the 11 days. After that 11-day period, if she sees Dam again, it's the beginning of the new Nida period. But it's very important to make a distinction between a Nida period and a Ziva period. Because a Nida period, she can see Dam multiple days in a row. As long as she's tarred on the 7 days, she goes to Mikvah Shitar. Ziva period, 3 days in a row, she needs 7 clean days. On the flip side, Nida period, she needs 7 days. If she's starting a Nida period, there's 7 days of Timah. Where in a Ziva period, it can only be 1 day. So each one carries its own Chumras and Kula, so to speak. So Zakta Mishnah, Ein Pesach Batoya Pachas Meshiva V'Liyesa Al Shiva Aser. So, if an Isha is in this state where she's not sure exactly where she's up to, she knows she saw Dam and she's not sure, is it part of the Nida period, is it part of the Ziva period, there's no less than 7 days, and no more than 17 days to return out of her confusion. Essentially, to know that she's starting a new clean Nida cycle, the only way to be guaranteed would be a minimum of 7 and a maximum of 17, and the Gemara is going to explain exactly how we get to these numbers. Tanar Rabbanim. Taya Sha'amra, Ishu is Taya. Taya literally means mistaken. Over here really means she's confused. She knows Sha'amra, Yemechad Tamirisi. I know I saw Dam one day, but I'm just not sure what that day was. It could be day 6, middle of day Nidus. It could be day 5, middle of 11 days of Ziva. It could be the first day of Ziva. It could be the first day of Nida. I don't know what it is. So, Pischa Shivasar, the way for it to know for sure that she's starting a new Nida period and to kind of recalibrate her cycle. So again, in order to know whether she's tar or not, if she has 7 clean days, she's guaranteed tar. That's for sure, because manavshach, either she's finishing a Nida period or she was a Zava, even a Zava Gedela, 7 clean days makes her tar. So for her to be tar right now, all she needs is 7 clean days to be tar. But in order for her to know, to recalibrate her calendar, to know where she's holding in the calendar, for that, she would need a minimum of 7, a maximum of 17. And in this case, we're saying, but she knows one day I saw Dam, she needs 17. What's the logic? The logic is that that day of Tumah that she saw can be possibly the first day of Nida. If it's the first day of Nida, she still has 6 more days of Nida plus 11 days of Ziva. That's the furthest away from Nida, a new Nida cycle. That's possible. Remember, because it's 7, 11, total of 18 days. And then any dam after the 11 starts the new Nida cycle. So 7-11, 7-11. Normally there's about a month's period in between you start the Nida to the next Nida. But theoretically, the new Nida cycle starts after 18 days, after the 7-11. So if she sees dam on the first day, the longest it could be the first day of Nida. 6 more days of Nida plus 11 days of Yimei Ziva gives you another 17 days. So she waits 17 days. If she has 17 clean days, she now knows for sure the next time she sees dam, she's recalibrated her schedule and she can start from being a Nida again. Shnei Yamim Tame Reisi. What if she says, I saw 2 days of Tuma? Again, she still needs 17 days. Why? Pischa Shavasar, she has to wait 17 days of clean days in order to be guaranteed she's restarting her calendar for Yimei Nida again. Because the first day she saw may be a day in the Yimei Ziva, maybe the last day of the Yimei Ziva. The second day she saw maybe the first day of Yimei Nida, and therefore in order to be positive, she would still have to wait 17 days. Shloish Yam Tamarisi, if she says, I saw 3 days in a row of Tumma, then again, this is the last case of 17. Pascha Shavasar, again she needs 17, because again, we could say 2 days, the first 2 days were from the last Ziva period. The third day is the first of the new Nida period. And again, she needs six more days of Nida, plus 11 days of Ziva, to total 17, to get to the new clear Nida cycle. So she would need, by the way, these days have to be clean days again, in order to be able to recalibrate and say that now the next seeing of Dam is Nida, but you need 17 clean days to get to a new Nida cycle. However, if she saw 4 days, Arbayam Tamarisi, so now you have Manjach, Arbayam Tamarisi, she says, I saw 4 days, then if you say 3 days are from Yimei Ziva, that means she's a Zava Gedela, and a Zava Gedela does not become a Nida. So if she's a Zava Gedela, she needs to wait 7 clean days. Until she has 7 clean days, she's not starting the new Nida cycle. So if you're going to say the first 3 days of the four were all 3 days in Yimei Ziva and 11 days of Ziva, she's now a Zava Gedela, needs 7 clean days, and that's it. And then she starts, then whenever she's down, she's down after that, she'll need the cycle. So that'll be very lenient, so to speak. You only need 7 clean days. And obviously, the fourth day was she saw Dam as well, so you need 7 clean days from after the fourth day. But we can't assume that the 3 days were 3 days of Ziva, because maybe they weren't. What's the possibility? It's possible two, the most stringent possibility for her is that two were Yimei Ziva, not enough to make herself a Gedela. Two were from the new Nida, but if it's two from the new Nida, then she only has 5 days left of Nida, plus 11 days of Ziva, which is a total of 16 more days, and that's what the Gemara says, Pascha Shishasar, she needs 16 clean days in order to start her new Nidas L'chumra. Chamisha Yamam Tamerisi, if she says she saw 5 days, again, you can't have the first three being part of Ziva, because if it is, then all she needs is 7 clean days. So we say the first two of the five were from Yimei Ziva, potentially. The next three were for the first 3 days of Yimei Nida. So all she's left with now with is 11 days of Ziva plus 4 days of Nida, which is Pascha Chamisha Asar, she needs 15 days. And so on and so forth. Shisham Tamarisi, if she says, 6 days of Dam Straight, I'm not sure where my calendar was. The first 2 days you attribute to potentially being the end of Yimei Ziva. The next four are Yimei Nida, and therefore you have 3 days of Nida left, 11 days of Yimei Ziva left. And Pascha Abasar, 14 days is enough. Shivasham Tamarisi, if she says, I saw 7 days of Tema, Pascha Shlesh Asar, you down to 13, because again, two from the last, five from the Yimei Ziva, five from the new, you could say, is potentially the new Nida, plus two more from Nida and 11 more of Ziva is 13, so 13 days is enough. Shmein Yam Tamarisi, if she says, I saw 8 straight days of Dam, Pascha Shnayim Asar, she can begin her new count of Nidas after 12 clean days, because again, you already have 6 days of Nida, minimum, plus 11 days of the new Ziva, 6 plus 7, one, so you're left with 1 day of Nida plus 11 of Ziva, is 12 days, that's enough. Tishyam Tamrisi, if you saw 9 days, Pascha Acharasar, she only needs 11, because again, you're already covering the full days of Nida. Even if two is from the old Ziva and you have 7 days of Nida, you have 9, so you only need 11 now of Yimei Ziva to get to the new days of Nida. Asariyam Tamarisi, Pascha Asara, she's down to 10. Acharasar, she has 11 days of Tumma, she sees. Pascha Tisha, she's down to 9. The math follows very simply. Shneim Asar, if she sees 12 days of Dam, again, you're attributing at most 2 to the Yimei Ziva. So the next 7 are Yimei Nidas, and then you still have, even after 2 and 7, 3 more days into Yimei Ziva. So I have 8 days left of Yimei Ziva, Pascha Shmaina. Shloisha Asar, Pascha Shiva, 13 days, goes down to 7. She'ein Pesach B'taya, Pachas M'Shiva. But there will never be less than 7. Once she's making mistakes, 7 you'll never have. For yes, Shiva Asar, and never more than 17. More than 17 we already explained, because the most chomer tikkatzad is that the day of Dam that she saw was the first day of Nida. That's the longest disparity. And therefore you have 17 days left, because 7 plus 11 is 18. She saw the first day as day 1, 17 days left. And the least is 7, because you're always going to need 7 clean days, because maybe the reyes that she saw were Yimei Ziva. Maybe the reyes were, even if she saw 10, 12, 13 days straight, there's obviously a concern that 3 of those days were Yimei Ziva. It requires a minimum of 7 clean days, and therefore it's 7 and 17. Why do you need all these days? So Rabba did not understand that we're trying to recalibrate her calendar. We just understood that we're trying to get her tar. To get her tar, only need 7 clean days. Lamli kulihai, Timni, Tish Shiva, Vitishri, let her count 7 clean days. Emma Mun of Shakshi's tar, if she was a Nida, it's the end of Nida days, even if she's a Zav Gedela, 7 clean days makes her tar. Amarle, Latakune Lide, Nida, Upischa Kamrina. We want to recount her calendar to open up her schedule that she can go back to start with days of Nida and continue with days of Ziva in order to get a clear schedule. That's what we're talking about. But you're right, just for her to be Torah to her husband, there would be an Eitzah with seven clean days. Tarabban. Kol Tayas Zoveis Mavias Karban Bein Nechel. All Nashim that are mistaken, they're confused, again, the way they were explaining it, with their days. They have a din of Zava, and they bring a Karban which cannot be eaten, Chutzpah Pischa Shiva Pischa Shmeina, except for one who is having seven clean days and then starting, or 18 days and starting, but we know for sure she's obviously coming on the heels of some, she had 12, 13 days of Dam straight. We know for sure there was a Zavah Gedela mixed in there, and therefore she brings a carbon, she brings a carbon Menachem. Ask the Gemara, the Lashon, Atukal, Tayyah Zavahs. The first Lashon of the Bryce was, all mistaken, all Lashon that are confused are Zavahs, they mean a carbon, and it can't be eaten. Is every one of them a Zav? Is that so? Not all of them have three straight days that they saw that are even, they're not even a Suffolk Zav. If you only saw one or two days, you're not mechuyev to bring a carbon. So why are we saying that all nashim that are tayis have a din of? Sorry, the two questions are: you're saying there, it sounds like you're making them a vade zav. First of all, they're in doubt. Who says there is zav bechlal? Second of all, even if potentially the diamond that they saw were in Yemei Ziva, not Yemei Nida, you need 3 days minimum to make her a Zav. Not one or two. One or two for sure not be a Zav. So it's clearly the case that she's for sure not a Zav. Ella, kol Zavis Hatayis Mevias Karba Vein Nechel, all Zavis, where they're in a matzav of, it's not whoever is a Tayis automatically a Zava. It's opposite. Whoever is a Zava with this doubt, with some sort of issue, safek, so she means a carbon which cannot be eaten. Chutzpah pischa shiva upasach shmeinah shemavias carbon nechel. In that last case, because she's vadei as zava gedela, she can, whether it's 7 days or 8 days of cleanliness, if she's only keeping 7 or 8 days, that means she for sure saw 3 days of dam throughout the ziva period, and therefore she would have to bring a, she would bring a carbon, and her carbon would indeed be eaten. Normally, just to clarify, the carbon that a zava brings is a Khan, a set of birds, chattas, and ayla. The ayla gets fully burnt, the chattas bird gets eaten, but in a case where you're not sure if she really was a zava, the chattas bird cannot be eaten. And normally you don't bring a chattas. Misafik, chattas payment, don't bring misafik. If there's any doubt, whereas a chattas aif, we allow to bring it, in order to cleanse her, we allow to bring it, and just misafik, it's not eaten, it gets destroyed, but you cannot eat it, because maybe it wasn't really a chiv chattas, maybe she wasn't really a zava, and it's chul mazara, so you don't eat it, but you are allowed to bring it, as opposed to chattas behemoth, which you can't even bring when it's a safik. So like the Mishnah, in Negarim pachas b'shavu echad, by Negarim, you don't have less than 1 week, meaning the time frames for Negarim is always a minimum of 1 week of watching, of confinement, or as many as 3 weeks. The Mishnah explained right away that it's the difference between whether it's Nige Adam or Nige Batam. Says the Gemara, Pachas B'Shavua, Nige Adam, less than 1 week, never less than 1 week, refers to the Nigayim of Adam that requires, when it requires locked up, it requires at least 1 week of lockup. V'Leyesha Shesha Shavua, Nige Batam, it's talking about the Nige Batam, which requires as much as 3 weeks of lockup by Nige Batam. Amra Papa, Tzchaska Kare Kael. Tzchaska Kare El, sorry. Your Tzitzka Tzchash Baruch Hu is like the mighty Elvim is mighty. The mighty mountains. Elu Nigi Adam. Because the tzidkas of Hashem is such that you're only locked up for 1 week. But your mishpat is more of judgment. Taim Rabba. Elu Nigi Batim, which can be locked up for 3 weeks. That's the, in a God to taich in that pasuk. Pashta to call my kuksiv. Or yes, what's the simple taich to pasuk? Amar Yehuda. Il moetz kosel kari el. If your tzidkas was not like the mighty mountains, miyuchalama in the famous mishpatech taim Rabba, who would be able to withstand your judgment, which is like the depths, like the vast depths of the world? That is Rabbi Yehuda's taich. Rabbis is slightly different. Rabbi Amar, tzidkas kari el, your tzidkas, your charity, is like the mighty mountains. Mipnei shem mishpatech taim Rabba, because your judgments are strong, are vast, like the depth. What does that mean? What's the machlokes? Mike and Mithugi, Mark explains, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Chanina. Machlokes is the same machlokes as Rabbi Chanina did Mar. We learned in a memra about the midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Yigam Midas Rachman. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know that when you're 50-50, when the world's 50-50, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he tips the scales and makes us Zeicha Badin. The question is, what's the mechanics of that? How does that work? Rabbi Lazar says, he hides some of the Averis, and by hiding some of the Averis, it causes the scale to tilt, to be heavier on the mitzvah side, and therefore the mitzvah side wins. No, he lifts up the side of the scale of Averis, he makes it lighter, so to speak, he lifts it, doesn't hide the Averis per se, but he lifts that side, and the flip side, the side of mitzvah now becomes, is the side that's weighing down, and it's outweighing the Averis, and it wins. Rabbah, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Huda, Kibreis Behuda, Rabba fits like Rabbi Lezer's Taich, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hiding the Averis, Rabbi Huda gives a finger like Kibreis Achanina, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is lifting up these, he's holding the Averis, he's the Mishpat he's doing with the Mishpat, he's supporting the Averis, not hiding them, and that's how Klal Yisrael wins. Okay, we pointed out yesterday, we had a Gemara that discussed that if the Isha is being taken out to be killed, to be executed, and she's pregnant, so we had, I think it was Rabbi Shmuel said, that you hit her in the stomach first to kill first the Uber, and then you proceed with executing her. And the reason is because we don't want to suffer the busha of being already killed and having something come out of her body, which could be, it's considered a disgrace for her. And we are bothered that L'chairi, going and taking the Uber and killing the Uber to protect from the disgrace of the mother, how you let abort a baby to protect the disgrace of the mother? Bishlam, when you kill the mother, the baby dies with Uber Yechimai, it's part of the mother, but to kill the baby directly, to hit the Uber first, in order to protect the mother's busha, why is that permissible? So we spoke at two answers. One answer was from Rav Meisha, who said that when there's a psak on the mother for Misa and there's an Uber in the mother's stomach, the psak is going on the Uber too. It's one psak for the Uber. Now, to be clear, avada, if the Uber is somehow born before you get a chance to kill the mother, there's no din to kill this Uber. It's just a din to kill the Uber, kolzman, it's in the mother. So, since it's a din to kill the Uber, kolzman, it's in the mother, there's a psak to kill the Uber as well. So, therefore, killing the Uber would not be considered a regular chiyuv killing, aborting of a baby. That's one explanation. It's a Meisha's explanation. The Chavis Yar says, his lashon ulai, Chavis Yar, and he's discussing actually a bigger shaila of Nebuch, if a person had either an istik relation, and there's a mamzer brewing in her stomach, or she was nenas, but he discusses the validity of being able to abort a baby before it's born in certain scenarios, so he connects it to this Gemara. Now, just to be clear, for a guy, to kill an Uber is actually regular Chiv Misa. Killing an Uber and killing a life, regular life person is the same thing, Zayimus Benayach, as Chiv Misa. By a Yid, it's Aser, aborting a baby, but it's not the same, there's no Chiv Misa, it's not the same as killing a live person. So already is definitely different than killing a live person, but still, you still not to do it. It's still Aser, says the Chavis Yar, why over here was it permissible for Busha? He says, because since the baby was Mistama going to die anyway when you kill the mother, the baby's lifespan is 10 years anyway, so, all you're doing is killing it a little bit earlier. It's going to die anyway. You're killing it a little bit earlier. So it's chayisha. For the bush of the mother, we're not so makbar on the chayisha. Perhaps. That's his answer. But there's a massive nafkamina. According to Meisha, the baby has a din. They allow to kill it. According to Chavis Yar, you're not really allowed to, but the bush of the mother, we're not so makbar on the chayisha. Which begs the question, again, we're talking about an Uber, not a regular life person, so you can't make an automatic connection, but it begs the question, how far do we take this idea of chayisha, that the person's for sure going to die, and it's a matter of, there's reasons why one may want to expedite their death. They're going to die anyway. If they're not for sure going to die anyway, imminently, then of course, it's a regular chiv misa, it's resicha, one's not allowed to kill them. But if they're going to die imminently, so it's just a question of chayisha, and the other considerations, this case was a case of vusha for the mother, but other considerations, tsar is the most common consideration. At what point is there any makam to be mekel? So there's various gemaras and shas where this comes up. It's two places. We're going to focus on one. The most famous one is the story of Chanan ben Tradium, which came up in the Daf on Shabbos. So Rabbi Leibster brought it up. That in the story of Chanan ben Tradium, that the Roman officer had lit him on fire, but he put something by his heart, by his chest, to make sure he dies slowly. That was part of the command. And he said, if you remove it and help me die faster, he begged him to remove it, and he said, "Well, we my schus if you do it." And Rechamit Chajin said, "If you do it, you'll be zechet to come with me into Elam Haba." And he did it. He jumped in the fire, and he died together, and he went to Elam Haba. Fine. The shaila is, how is Rechamit Chajin allowed to do it? How is he allowed to tell the guy? The guy also can't murder. How is he allowed to tell the guy to kill him faster? The chayr it's a raya that when someone's in pain and they're vaday going to die, that would seem to be a raya that you're allowed to expedite the death in order. There's no need to keep someone alive just for them to suffer. There's no obligation. On the contrary, you can let it expedite the death. Now, if you notice, I said two different things there. There's a difference between keeping them alive or expediting the death. Keeping them alive is doing a positive act to keep them alive, and that's taka pasul lach lemaisa. Once he asked Reb Shlomo many years ago, and he said, "Lach lemaisa, if someone is for sure going to die, it has to be the for sure they have a death. They're either gracious or they're in the middle of a fatal illness, and it's a matter of time. It's imminent." And there's a question of doing something to keep them alive further, and all they're doing is suffering. There's no obligation to keep them alive further. He did throw in a caveat, and he said that you have to be very careful, because when you tell that to the doctors, even just, let's say, DNR, when you tell them DNR, they often switch and they do things that may expedite the death. So, and that you can't do. That he's going to say is usher. But there is no chiyuv to keep someone alive to suffer. There's certainly no chiyuv for that. But to expedite it, he's to death, that's taka usher. I, the story of Chanan ben Trajan, so he said a Goyen Shechab, says that this guy had already did a makas mavis. He did a makas mavis to Chanan ben Trajan. He did the makas mavis. He's already chayv ritzicha for killing Chanan ben Trajan. In a normal case, a person who's about to die, and he's in suffering and pain, really there's no chiyuv to keep him alive. And technically, if someone would have a permissible method of expediting the death, they could do it because you don't want the person to suffer needlessly. The problem is there is no permissible way to expedite death because expediting death is a form of ritzicha. So why was the guy able to do Rechanan ben Trajan? Because this guy was already chayef for killing Rechanan ben Trajan. He made him a dead man walking. He did the makas mavis already. Killing the same person twice is not shayech. For someone else to make the Misa closer, to make the Misa faster, the other person's also going to be chayev. But for the same person who already did a death blow, Reuven gives Shimon a death blow. And then Shimon's thrashing in pain, and then he hits Shimon again and makes him die faster. Is Reuven chayev Misa a second time for killing Shimon? Avadanat. He's already chayev Misa for killing Shimon. This guy was the only person who can go and expedite the death of Chaim Tragedy because he already had done the Makas Mavis. So Dafko over there was their Hechatim Tzah. Mashenki, in a normal case, expediting the death of a person, even when they're suffering, would be usher. So again, at the face of it, Rechaim and Trajan's story would seem to be a source to be makel, to allow even expediting death, but Rav Shlomo gave an explanation why it doesn't fit. It's dafka because it's the guy himself who did the makas mavis. He's completing what he's done, therefore it's permissible, but under other circumstances, there's no chiyuv to keep someone alive to suffer, but there is no mechanism with which to expedite the death because expediting death alone is a It may not be chayv misa for that, but it's a form of ritzicha. It's a iser, it's a lav, and therefore no one can carry out that act.